Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello and good evening and welcome to the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now Scan Blog Talk Radio Show. NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Victoria Kelly and I'm your host for this evening. We are on scan number 3322, and I'm excited to introduce to you our special guest this evening. However, first, I'd like to let you know that we have a single purpose here at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. We do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, or CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, we are on scan number 3322. And if you'd like to be part of the panel this evening, please call in at 646-595-2118, and I will meet you on the back line and ask if you'd like to ask any questions or if you have anything to say. And we'd love to have you join us to support our guests. So we're having a question and answer call-in discussion with our survivor professional, Pastor Deborah, and we have an open mic forum. So if you call in, we're going to allow you to be able to ask questions or Pastor Deborah always comes to the topic, and you have any questions as well, we would love to have you join in. There has been some issues with Blog Talk Radio, and so I'm going to have Pastor Deborah come on and introduce yourself. Welcome, Pastor Deborah. Glad you could come on.
Hello. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's good to be back. It's been about a month, but that's okay. I'm Pastor, a global minister, have an organization that does spiritual teaching videos. I had been a licensed clinical mental health counselor for about 10 years, trying to help people with their issues and healing and understanding from that viewpoint. Then I became a pastor and had to learn a lot. And I had been in the military, so I have a foundation of support, sort of serving a country, being dedicated, being disciplined, studying the enemy, studying what wars and things like that. And I had issues in my family, childhood trauma. My mother was mentally ill from about most of my life. My brother was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and manic depressive, I think that's what it was. And he ran away from home a lot of trauma, a lot of arguing, fighting, crying, nobody talking. So I had a life of loneliness, so to speak. And but I got through it. And then I wanted to help people. So I went into mental health counseling, and that was really about the only way. I was on track to be a psychologist, but you had to work with lab rats. I didn't like that, so I didn't go that far. And I got my master's degree from Troy State University with all officers, all men, and some from around the world, at Troy State University on an Air Force base, Maxwell. And then I went into working in a rehabilitation institute with spinal cord injury patients, head injury patients, adults, teens, anything, burns. So I had a lot of medical, wonderful medical for about a year and a half to 2 years, working with physicians and nurses, helping with mental health issues. And then I went into private practice. I worked with disabled people, and I got in with a psychologist in nursing homes, doing Social Security disability, IQ testing, group work. So I've had a variety of experiences. I've volunteered in the community with hospice, the guardian ad litem, a state's victims advocate, and I've had drug and alcohol counseling and worked with those people, inpatient, outpatient. So I've had a variety of experiences. And then when I got into ministry work, I started in the jail reading scriptures and working with women in jails, and then went to Bible school. I was almost ordained, but I didn't fit the little box of that particular denomination, so we kind of split our ways. Learned how to write sermons. Wasn't very good at it. I was better at one-to-one ministry, talking to people in crisis situations. I've been in churches and had to take guns away from people, machetes and knives, and never was afraid of being attacked or anything like that, but I have been attacked. And been sexually assaulted, new boyfriends, So I had a lot of experience personally in a lot of variety of areas. And then in my training to learning how to go the Lord's way, I had to put my license down, and it took years to learn how, a whole new set of guidelines on how to help people with ministry, deliverance, healing, talking, prayers, understanding the world I didn't understand, trying to help people with child abuse and with their ancestors, all kinds of like curses on their lives. And I was trained with some the most serious abused people you could ever imagine, with multiple personalities, drug and alcohol addictions, transgender, bisexual, just everything, and into witchcraft and the occult. So I went from one type of helping to another. So that's sort of my background, and I don't know if there's anybody on the line that wants to ask me any questions about my background. And if you want more of my bio, you can look on the website of www.agapelovesheer.org. In the reference sections about, there's a picture of me with my bio and stuff like that.
Okay, we have Philip on the line. Hi, Philip. Thank you for coming on the show. Do you have any questions?
Have you ever worked on anybody's, like, have you ever gone into the hospital when people want 5150s and comforted them or whatever?
Have you ever gone into the hospital and worked? Yes. And then what was the second part?
Have you ever gone into the hospital when somebody else was on a 5150 or anything like that and helped them in their situation, in their time of need?
Yes. Part of my training to be a pastor, was I actually paid a lot of money to go into a clinical pastoral education program where for we went to the hospital 5 days a week. We were taught by a psychologist. We went on the floors. Then once a week, we were in the emergency room. So I have been around people dying, families, emergency room, suicide attempts, gunshots, psychiatric, non-psychiatric, with the nurses, and that kind of thing. So I got a lot of hospital experience. Then I volunteered here recently, several years ago, to work in the local mental health crisis stabilization unit. It's where if you were at home and you went out of control and the police came, they'd take you in their car and they'd take you to this special place, and you were locked down. So I worked through the waiting room where people were laying in chairs and, you know, just losing it and waiting to get into the program, see a psychiatrist, get medicated. Then I worked with the patients there who were, and I'd go in once a week and talk about spiritual care. And then I worked in a homeless shelter doing the lunch thing with homeless people and did that for a while. And so I've had a lot of just unique experiences. Most master's level people come out, graduate, and they maybe get in private practice or they work. I've had 2 years of supervision, usually start doing that. In a community mental health center, you have to be supervised by a licensed counselor. I had that with a PhD psychologist. And you have to have that, and they talk with you about what you're doing. They look at your charts. So I had that. So before you even get licensed, you've already had 2 years under strict supervision, a lot of book studying. I was just a little different because I didn't go to work initially for a mental health center, you know, like outpatient counseling or an inpatient program. I went to a rehabilitation hospital. And so it was quite different. And, you know, it was so many different diseases I had to learn. I was around wonderful medical doctors and had a lot of training in that area and was just unique. So that was my early years in mental health counseling. And when I was trying to become a minister, my pattern before me was really that, you know, you get on staff at a church and, you know, you see the parishioners. So I had tried to be a what they called a Christian counselor and sort of combine the two worlds and have many of the different denominations pay for me. And I would be at one church and they could refer their people there and they'd get free counseling. That didn't work out either. And, you know, and then I was led to put my license down and don't go in that direction, but go as a minister and a pastor, and which was totally different. It was still helping people, but, you know, who still had problems, suicide, depression, homosexuality, transgender, you know, violent criminals, all kinds of things like that, psychiatric issues. Was still helping those people, but from a different viewpoint and with different knowledge. And I was starting from zero. So, but I was dedicated. I knew that God, who was going to be my new supervisor, he was in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And I would read 6 or 8 books at one time. I was in church 6, 7 nights a week, watching all kind of teaching videos and churches. I was absorbed and didn't live a normal life, didn't watch television for years, maybe the news, that was it, didn't participate in most of the activities going on in the world because I was studying all the time. Got very little sleep.
Can I ask you a question?
Uh-huh, sure.
What's your most favorite work experience that you've had?
Favorite work experience? I'd have to say all of it because
okay.
In order to help okay, reason is when you're trying to help people, you have to love people of all kinds. I always, when I was a young teenager maybe, I read true stories. I was into the truth. I would read about, like, Vivian Leigh, who played in Gone with the Wind, how she went mentally ill. Patty Duke Austin, who had major psychiatric problems. I wanted to know their stories. And so I began just loving people, and I would hang out with friends that were not your normal type of people. People that had no friends, people that had disabilities. Back in the South, I was hanging out with black people. Of course, in the military, there wasn't any prejudice or anything. So I was weird. I loved everybody. And I was just a fun, loving young girl, I guess. And I would just be friendly and loving. And people would say, well, why do you love my... I don't know. I just do. I said, I give out my love during the day. And at night, God would fill me back. And that began sort of the experience.
Oh, I love that.
So,
I got to stop you right there. I got to stop you right there. I love that.
Okay.
People often ask
and
me,
I didn't know...
People often ask me how you get regenerated after... You know, that
yeah, I didn't know why I loved. Yeah, I didn't know why.
How you get regenerated?
I don't know. I just knew I'd go to bed and, you know, reading and studying so God could trust me because I read, I studied, I was interested in truth. If I books and I became buddies because in my family nobody talked. I wanted to understand mental illness. I could see something was wrong. So it was me in the library. I would read books. I'd read true stories. My parents were different. They read the untrue stories. They wanted to read novels and stuff. I was different. So I had this experience in me, one, growing up all around the world, being in a military family. Our foundation is different. We do not get involved in local stuff in the community. We really don't care about the sports. We don't care about any of that. Our job is to be trained, educated, disciplined, ready to lay down our lives, sacrifice, die to protect a nation. Our friends are the same way. We lived on base. I never lived outside in the community until I was maybe in the fifth grade. I didn't know, I didn't care about the time we were in Alabama. I did not care about the football games, the rivalries, knew nothing about the South, the colors of the uniforms. But I had already had experience with Saudi Arabia, Greece, Vietnam, England, Hawaii, the Philippines, Guam, Japan. I'd already had experience worldwide.
Are you saying that you were at all places? Is what you're saying?
Yes, a lot of travel.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, I misunderstood that.
And
okay.
Then when I was around a lot of men all the time in the university, getting my graduate degree, all officers, flying airplanes, helicopters, jets, people from all around the world in my graduate classes. So my experiences in helping people were so broad. It was a world viewpoint. I used to work in it was called Mount Meigs Industrial School for Juvenile Delinquents when I graduated with my bachelor's. I was around boys, hardcore juvenile delinquents in this state industrial school out in the wilderness. They'd back me up against walls. I had nothing except my voice and an authoritative personality to back them down. I was around some bad people, but I loved them. And then I'd work there till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and go to college, working on my master's degree till 10 o'clock at night. That was my life. And I had experiences scuba diving, traveled all over the Caribbean, traveled in caves. I was a cave diver, took underwater photography. I didn't do any spearfishing. I was a very adventuresome, tough individual. Could meet anybody from around the world. I mean, I even rode mules to get to diving spots down in off of Honduras. So I was a traveler. So I knew the world. I didn't. What most people get involved in the stuff, it meant nothing to me. I was in books, reading true stories, horrible true stories about people. Couldn't make you puke. But I had to learn how to help people a different way. And God took all my foundation, my love of books, learning, wanting to know the truth, being willing to give up a 10-year profession. I went from making about $28,000 a year. That was years ago. So nothing, having no job, no professional identity, thought I was going to get on staff as a pastor. That didn't work out. Had absolutely nothing. My master's degree, gone. No money, nothing. And yet I stayed steady. I knew God was working with me. He was going to teach me. He was going to help me. I was going to help the Phillips of the world and the Annies of the world and the Victorias of the world. Didn't know who you were. I used to cry for you, beg God to send somebody to help you. I didn't know who you were, where you were at. They were all over the world. Cry and cry and cry and cry and plead with God. He said, okay, I'm going to send you. I go, no, sir, don't send me. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to find him. What am I supposed to do? I was already talking to him on the telephone. They were crown princes over in Europe. They were counts, political leaders, judges, lawyers, policemen. I have lived with my phones tapped, satellites on me. Every word that I say on the phone is recorded. Now, that just wasn't in the books for mental health counseling. So I went from, I had to have that deep love. And one night how it happened, I was in church in a praise and worship time, and the Holy Spirit, a lot of people may not know about him, asked me, what was the desires of my heart? I immediately said to mother, to all in the occult that had been abused, homosexuality, hardcore heavy metal music, homosexuals, transgenders, anybody and everybody, so I could turn their heart to the Father. And Holy Spirit said, it's done. I was anointed right then. So my experiences are still helping people, but a totally different way. And God didn't waste, and I told him, don't waste any of my mental health counseling, any of my experiences that I had in that during that time. Don't waste any of it. And he hasn't. Any other questions, Miss Victoria or Philip? Or?
Yeah, I kind of have a question. And most of you probably don't know, but I'm an old lady. I'm 61. And I have a lot of goals and stuff that I still plan on doing. And my kids, I guess my daughter, kind of sees really no future in like, going back to school and things. And it kind of spiritually discourages me. I kind of wanted to get your idea on maybe how to get across to my daughter, or I don't know if other people have this issue, that as long as I'm alive, I'm going to continue to grow and educate myself and, you know, do what I want to do for my life. I feel I still have much purpose left. Does that make sense? I don't know if that was a question or a discussion.
Okay. Once you get healed, okay, and you're in your healing process from child trauma, child abuse, whatever, you start discovering you do have a purpose. You may not know what it is or how to do it yet. But once you realize you have a purpose, that's the beginning. Whether it's to help other people, whether it's to continue to get healed, okay, and then, you know, enjoy life. Understanding you have a purpose, you're still here, is the beginning.
Right.
Sometimes when I was working with suicidal patients and people who wanted to kill their own family, okay? I'm very comfortable with hardcore prison people, gang members, all kinds of stuff. And I ask them one question. Do you want to live? And they would say, yes. Now, how to live? They didn't know why they should live. They didn't have any reason to live, but I needed that answer. Then I took it from there in prayer as a minister. In the mental health world, I had to deal with this. We were told in our training, if you're in counseling and somebody is starting to talk about suicide and they might have those plans, we were to immediately send them to the emergency room. I had a young girl that was planning to do that, and I had her, I sent her to the psychiatric hospital because she was suicidal. And then what happened, in the pecking order of mental health counseling, when you get in the psychiatric hospital, there's a medical doctor called a psychiatrist. He is over everybody, and he has, of course, nurses working with him, and usually they have a private practice, and they usually have social workers, medical, clinical, licensed social worker. So this girl was sent to the psychiatric, and she was my patient client. She gets there, she becomes a patient, and then the psychiatrist refers her to his private practice. So I lose this young girl client, and my psychologist I was working, oh, he was mad, because this is how it works. There's a pecking order. Psychiatrists are at the top of the pecking order. Then usually there's the psychologist, then the licensed clinical social workers, then the mental health counselors. But I've dealt with that, and what happens is you have to understand, first you have to decide you want to live if you're depressed and everything like that. And then you have to discover somehow, some way, you have a purpose. You probably won't know what it is till you get more healing.
Well, I've known all my life I've had a purpose. I mean, even when I was a little kid, I was put on an MBA carnival, I think, when I was 12 years old, and I got all this money that we raised. And my girlfriend was doing it with me, and she saw that money, and she said, you know, we could just take this and nobody would know. I was horrified. I wouldn't let her near any, you know, because it was like, are you kidding me? And it blew my mind, because I thought we were putting all that work, you know, into giving it to MBA. And, it just kind of blew my mind. And so all my life, I've always done things to help others. Even when I was homeless, I was up there helping other people. You know, and I always thought that was, you know, I want to go further and get some education so that I can turn a grassroots organization into a nonprofit. And I don't know if my daughter just doesn't think it's worth it because I'm so old, or she just wants me to, like, just relax, Mom, and, you know, enjoy your golden years or whatever. You know, I don't know. Yeah. And I feel like I'm having a fight.
I'm sure
not a fight, but just an emotional kind of level.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Our kids, they look at us differently. Like you said, they just want you to rest. You've been through so much, you know, and yet you have yours. And here's how I do it. Me and my son and husband and stuff, COVID comes, major fight. Okay? Because I don't take the COVID shot. I said, no, God gave me it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you don't love us, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, I'm just not going to talk to you. I had to make decisions on my life between me and God. He is the one who I'm going to see when I die. He is the one that asked me to change my life. I respond. I answer to him. I serve him, not my kids, not society, not husband, not family. And they don't like it. And there are arguments. And I go, I'm sorry. But...
Really argued about it, but you know, I can see that she's concerned because she knows, you know, I have stage 4 kidney failure and this and that. And I know my kids are concerned about me, and they know.
Okay, well, here's what you do.
Here's
what you do. When you're at that stage, you make sure all your funeral plans are taken care of. You got the money for that. Mm-hmm. You got your will read. You got your power of attorney done. You may be given, you notified everybody, I want you to have this and you to have that. Okay, I've done everything. Hey. And then you go to God and you would say this, God, I know you can do miracles, but that's up to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I do still have some things that I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm going to work on those. And you try to do what you can to alleviate the stress from your family. And they realize that, you know, their mom might be dying and, you know, it's not good. And here you are, want to keep living. It will cause stress. And all you can do is stay as peaceful and calm and dedicated. Mm-hmm. Get everything in order. And make sure your kids know that. And you say, everything's done now. And I still have whatever you feel called still to do. You keep doing it. Now, I'm a little different. You know, I'm pretty healthy. I'm 71. I'm going to be 72 this year. And I let Satan's tried to kill me many times. And I let him know I ain't going out till I pray my last prayer, till I've done my last person I'm supposed to adopt. When God says it's time for me to come home, I'll sit down in a chair or a bed, and I'll leave. But he can't take me out. Now, I do have to, you know, if you are working with God in very close partnership, and he and you talk with him, he can do some healing, but he may say, you know, you need a rest. Come on home. Don't worry about it. You've done all you can do. Everything's taken care of. You decluttered your house. You know, so your kids don't have to go and throw things away. You've donated stuff where you want it to go.
Right.
You got your power of attorney. You got your will. Okay. And then you just, if it's you feel like you just want to study or help people, you keep doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the family's going to be upset. They want you around. They don't want you to get sick. They don't want to lose you. And you can't change them, and you can't argue with them.
Uh-huh. I agree with that.
Okay. And the only thing I do is I understand how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I make my choices, and I've hung up on my family, and I said, I'm sorry. Okay. And they would say, well, then we'll never get to see you again because you won't get the COVID shot. I said, oh, well, I serve a bigger person. He is more important to me than you are. Now, they're not where I'm at. Okay.
Right.
But that's hard for them to understand. But I have said that. Okay. And so this, your life, if you have served him, that's between you and him.
Yeah.
He comes first.
Well,
I told my kids,
I'm going to live to be 100. And my son said, I'm not even going to live till you're 100. And I said, well, that's your plan. I said, I got a lot of things to do. You know,
okay,
I got
in
a
that
lot of
case,
things to do.
Okay, here's the thing, too. When I was learning deliverance work, part of helping people, I had to study curses and how words that you speak over yourself can give you life or death, blessings or curses, health or sickness. So what you speak and what you say, you know, even like that, I don't even plan, you just say, just cut, and that's how powerful words become. And and there's nothing you can do except they need education. They need teaching. They're blinded. Like, you know, they don't understand about words. I didn't understand. The words, blessings and curses, travel through words. That was not taught in mental health counseling.
Oh,
that's not taught what an abused person says to himself, okay, internally about themselves, okay?
Well,
they
I had a doctor in 2000. I had a doctor in 2000 that told me that I was going to die from breast cancer. I had tumors attached to my chest wall and chemo and radiation.
And that's just, okay. Now, you have to understand that is their clinical, medical understanding. Okay. And I am the type of person, once I got that knowledge during deliverance training of the power of words to bless or curse, give life or speak death, I would rebuke it openly to people. I rebuke that. I do not, I became a rebuker of death words from other people openly, even husband. Okay, because I knew I had seen from personal experience helping people who have been abused, power of even the abuser to speak, curses, and we learned that words were containers of life or death, blessings or curses. Okay, and things came with the words. So I knew God wanted me to help him to help people. I had to stay healthy. I had to fight for that, okay? Now, I have been had to stop an assignment of a man going to shoot me with a silencer on a bicycle and almost stabbed in my own home. I have been poisoned. I have had cars almost hit me running red lights. I have been had my husband even had his hands around my neck. I've had spiritual stuff happen, almost kidnapped. Yeah. So my life was in God's hands. But I understood, okay, how ignorance of words can produce results that, you know, people speak of. But my father's a great, he said he wanted to live to 121. That is biblical. You are given that in the Bible. But you got to take care of your body.
Right.
Okay. And he didn't. So he made it to about 92.
Yeah.
And then he passed away. So words are
curious. He had breast cancer. I did have a conversation with God and basically said, you know, if this is my time, this is my time, but I'm just going to keep living as long as you give me life. And the same thing happened when go ahead.
What you have to learn when you're talking about medical problems, never claim them. Like, people would say, oh, my back is killing me.
Yeah.
You have now spoken death. Your back will kill you. When you say you have you had breast cancer, you don't ever claim it. It's not yours. Okay. And you can speak to the cancer. You put your hands on your breast and you say, cancer, you have no right. And if I have, and it is a disease, it's bacteria, it's your own body turning against yourself, blah, blah, blah. You can ask your body to forgive you. You speak to the cancer cells. You tell them what they're going to do in the name of Jesus. This is the ministry part. Now, in mental health counseling, they try to help you deal with the depression, the anxiety, which is fear of having breast cancer. They try to give you support groups for that, okay? And I knew all that. But in helping people the Lord's way, you had to learn about the power of words, speaking to yourself, life, counteracting death. You had to learn you had an enemy. And he's trying to take you out. You had to learn their assignment. You had to understand curses, even through the families, that maybe a family member, a parent, an aunt, uncle cursed you when they were mad or angry or something. And, they still go on. When I was beginning to do deliverance work, I would break off curses from ancestors back 10,000 generations.
Wow.
And, oh, my gosh, the response in that person was horrendous.
Yeah.
Okay? That is how far back curses can go.
Oh, yeah.
All the way back. Okay?
Yeah. They say things are passed on.
And one of the,
things are passed on from generation to generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is Philip still there?
No, Philip left. It's just you and I.
Yes, curses can be passed on. They can be passed on in many different ways. You have no idea. You don't know what four generations of parents did. Okay?
Yep.
You don't know what kind of prayers they prayed. And you don't know why you got what you got. Okay? Now, we see it in the natural world, sort of like in genetics. You know, something, it can be passed through genetics. It can skip a generation, you know, that kind of thing. So I had to learn totally different stuff in helping people with physical sicknesses, mental health issues, psychiatric situations, and that kind of thing. And so my training was just so unique. and I'm sure other people have had it.
Mm-hmm.
I was silent during my training. I talked to nobody. I just read my books, wrote my notes,
mm-hmm.
went through the experiences. I didn't talk to anybody when I was going through them. Only I would talk to God quietly. You'll never hear me pray hardly out loud. This is
mm-hmm.
between me and Him.
Mm-hmm.
And so in helping people, like I said, what was the topic? A lot of people go, I see it on LinkedIn, a lot of posts about, you know, heal yourself and, you know, take care of yourself and stuff. And so a lot of people need to figure out, can they heal themselves? Or do they need an outside person or something to heal them?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
mental health says you need medication and you need a therapist or a life
mm-hmm.
coach or something like that to talk with.
Mm-hmm.
In pastoral work, a lot of times they don't need to say anything to me
mm-hmm.
because how I was raised to help people the Lord's way was
mm-hmm.
that I knew everybody who I came into contact with in Walmart, online, internet, social media, on the phone, it didn't matter where I went, they had issues. And every place I went was a ministry field. It didn't
mm-hmm.
matter, at a restaurant, a waitress. I've done ministry with waitresses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Prayed with them right there while they're working.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized that probably everybody in the world needed help. So it didn't matter where I went in town, out to eat, shopping. I said, God, I'm here. Parking lot, that's fine. Gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that there was something. I used to go to get into the LGBT. I went to an LGBT church and just sat there and loved on them, helped give out food and clothing. Then I went to board of directors meetings with a local group. Then I sat in their support groups. Okay? There's plenty. You don't have to go anywhere, do anything. I would sit in a lot of mental health groups. I learned about the support and peer support. Everywhere you went, there's people that need help. Just a kind word, a prayer, just a friendly gesture, you know. Because everybody was dealing with things, and so I understood everybody needed help.
Right. Well, I wake up every morning and I thank God for being alive, first off, and then my next prayer is, help me help one person today, even if it's in the smallest way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that's
you know,
what I try to
hear. Okay. When you're working with the Lord to help people, He has His
mm-hmm.
own ways. He knows what each person needs.
Yep.
He knows what their issues are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would trust Him that, and I lived ready to do
mm-hmm.
ministry no matter
right.
where I went.
And,
you know, in the church, outside the church, in the home. I just did great ministry with my husband last week, I think. He was talking
mm-hmm.
about this war with Gaza and Israel. And he
mm-hmm.
didn't like the fact, you know, that children and infants and babies were getting killed in Gaza. And it bothered
mm-hmm.
him. I said, that doesn't bother you. You vote
mm-hmm.
for politicians who believe on abortion on demand. You vote
mm-hmm.
for people who kill a baby in a womb. I said, you're an unrighteous man because you're killing babies on demand. My son was born a month early, 3 pounds. There are some people who would let that baby lay on the table and die.
Yeah. Yep.
And he votes for those
kind
of people. Now, I don't vote anymore. I don't vote anymore. And the one issue that I chose when I was voting, were you for abortion or not? That was it. Nothing else mattered to me, because that's all that God cares about. So then I told him, I said, he was an unrighteous. Now, he's a believer, but he's way off. He's never been challenged. I said, you think you're righteous? You're not righteous. You're deceived. You can vote for somebody to kill a baby. And he hung his head down low. He knew. He shut. It's like I'm fighting a lion. And I just said, no, sir. You vote for that? Okay. It's everywhere. Is that ministry and helping people the Lord's way? Yeah. It's called education. Getting knowledge. Challenging. Okay. Somebody's beliefs. Here. And I think he got the picture. Will he change? I don't know. But in helping people, there is, you know, I love the mental health community. The psychiatrists love people. They are, are medical doctors. They know there's something wrong. And their training is there's something neurochemical wrong in the brain. If you don't have a brain tumor and you don't have a concussion, you know, with blood, and there's nothing like that that they, a neurosurgeon needs to deal with, then they know it's neurochemical. And they give you medication to affect the neurons and the chemical electrical stuff. When you had, I think you've had shock treatment, that's electrical, trying to do some electrical work. Yes, it is, but they're trying to stop the thoughts, the feelings. They're back. The history of, they've done a lot of stuff. And so are they trying to help you? Yes. Do they care about you? Yes. They don't like you trying to hurt yourself or other people. They don't want you to live, you know, tormented. And with their knowledge and their training, they're doing everything they know to do. They do love you. Okay. And I had to, you never, and a mental health counselor loves you. Training is to help you understand your feelings, your emotions, sort of get things under control. They love you too. And they were working
they
within
shocked,
their
they
friends.
They didn't have to shock out bad memories. They shocked out a whole bunch of memories of me and my children when we were little and experiences. My kids stopped bringing up stuff because I'd start crying.
Well, the thing is, people who have been traumatized, child abuse, have memories. It's in your chemical, electrical form in your biological brain. Okay? And they know it. And they're trying to help you have a tear-free, untroubled life. And
yeah,
only
well,
they
used to think
that
would be lobotomy, too, because people were docile after a lobotomy. You know.
Yes, because they couldn't get through drugs.
It is,
they couldn't control
it. But is that
it.
Even worth, that's not even worth a life as far as I'm concerned.
But if you not were even, in that psychiatric community at the time, remember a lot of helping things have gone through, oh, you got bad blood in you, we need to bleed you. And we need to get you've got some bad evil spirits up there, so we got to let them out of your brain. They're in your brain.
Well, on your
okay,
head,
so we have to cut up. So they cut a hole in the top of your brain called trepanning so they can escape. They kind of had the right idea, but okay. A lot of that's ignorance.
I know.
Okay. There's been evil spirits around forever, and there's been casting out of devils. And so, even in Islam, they cast out. Okay. They do the stuff. I've seen them. They call them a different name. And people have been into voodoo.
They asked me if I was depressed anymore, and I said no. And the reason why I said no is because they don't know no more damn shock treatments. I'm still depressed,
well,
so they wrote that down. I wasn't depressed.
Okay.
That ends up in the statistics.
Well, depression's a chemical reaction to stuff, and it's memories, and it's this, and it's that. But do they are they trying to help you? Yes, with their knowledge, okay? And they're trying with everything they know to give you a peaceful life, take away the bad memories. They don't know how, you know, they try hypnosis and all that. They're trying. And throughout the ages, they've always been trying to heal. There's been depression, sexual abuse. Okay? And even the church has tried so many different ways.
Yeah.
But nowadays you have, you know, mental health counseling. And is it a good thing? Sure it is.
Yeah.
And it's trying to bring healing to you so you can live a normal, happy family life, go to work, make money, have a job, go to ball games. And if you have to do that with drugs, they're okay with that. And most society's okay with it also. Okay? And in the way I, when God started helping me to help people, it was put before me some of the most severely, spiritually, abused people I had ever heard of.
Yeah.
Full of multiple personalities, full of demonic spirits, the dark side parts, light side parts. It was just never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
So God had to take his time. I had to read some horrible true stories about it. Had to look it up online, a lot of stuff like that. But I kept going. And then, you know, they started coming. Then I brought them in my home. That was some years with my 10-year-old son and husband here. So I was desiring, I knew it was a spiritual work that I was learning how to do. And what I was talking to you about earlier, about word curses, that was a part of it. And I had to study it out of the Bible, had to understand the, what curses were, studying voodoo and that kind of stuff, how they, people get cursed, had to study spells by witches, had to study all kinds of things that were spiritual and from the occult world. That wasn't in mental health counseling. Had to study ancestors and their words to their kids and their grandkids, and had to study, study, study. And what I learned was that when people have issues and they don't know where they're from and they don't look at the words that they speak or their parents have said to them or their spouses have said to them, and they don't understand the occult, they don't understand spiritual things. So I had to study a lot about curses and blessings, speaking over ourselves and speaking over our children and businesses and things like that, and what was prayer and how did that work? And then I'd study voodoo. How did that work? And so I had a lot of unique experiences. And but it was still helping people, trying to bring healing to very traumatized, abused people. And it was, like I said, I didn't talk to anybody. Surely, I got in more trouble in church because I knew more knowledge than the pastors did. They were very jealous of that. I was
I got
never
trouble
afraid.
When I was a kid, because I was asking questions, and they said, "You're not asking questions. You're supposed to be learning."
Well, I was never afraid of any of that, ever. I trusted God completely with my life. And I was around bad people. I was around killers and gang members and prostitutes. It didn't bother me because I knew I was protected. I had a job to do. I was enemy behind enemy lines. And I had a warrior's mentality, you know, from the military. I was looking, I was strong and tough. And so I was just different. So I knew that And I never badmouth the mental health world. I love them dearly. Mm-hmm. Work with a lot of them on committees and community organizations, and went to a lot of their free trainings.
Mm-hmm.
Learned about human trafficking, labor trafficking. Was a state victims advocate. Understood the law and attorney generals, and went into the jails. You know, okay. And been around some homeless people, dressed, you know. And served on a lot of community organizations with homelessness and disabilities and suicide and drug prevention. And I met a lot of wonderful, wonderful, caring people. And they were the girls would wear necklaces with crosses on them, but nobody opened up with prayer. You know, and so it was just interesting. I didn't say anything to anybody. I just observed and listened and learned what the world was trying to do to help people, and I'm thankful for it, very thankful, because sometimes that's the only way you're going to get some help, you know, get some medication, and so your brain can kind of calm down, get okay, understand sort of what's happened to you, and you have a loving therapist in your life, you know, that cares about, and if you had drug and alcohol, you were in AA or NA or something. And there was so much help. There was helplines, you know, 24 hours a day. And so, I didn't help everybody, but I just knew what I was supposed to do. Is there anybody on the line for us, Victoria?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. No, it's you and I.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and give out your... Why don't you give out the phone number and do that?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's 631... No, that's not it. I'm sorry. 646-595-2118, and we are on 5 nights a week. So if you... this is one of the shows that you're listening to after it's done. Please call in any other night. And you can find our shows on the NASCA website, which is naasca.org. And you can just look on the front page, and it'll have this call-in number, and it'll have what shows are listed and who the guest is going to be. And sometimes it's just an open question-and-answer discussion. And other times you might see a survivor coming on. And then, of course, we have Deborah on tonight, who is a survivor and a professional at the same time, which we have quite a few of them on as well. And we'd like to invite you to call in any time and be our panel. And we meet you and talk to you. And you don't have to talk. You can just come on and listen if you'd like, or let us know if you'd like to talk. You can push the number one, and that will raise your hand. Could you give them your website, but maybe spell it out so that,
okay,
because you said it kind of fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's www.agape, A-G-A-P-E, loveisheare.org. And it's got a lot of videos and stories, things to read, music, got my bios, my partners and resources. Then I have a children's channel called For Children of All Ages on YouTube. And another one called The Light of Love, which has different stuff on YouTube, and Hidden Kingdom.
The Light of Love, is that what it was?
Yeah. It has.
Okay.
Then I have YouTube Shorts from the past several. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, which is now called X. So I make my spiritual teaching videos. I usually edit them every day, and I'll record a couple. And like when this is over, I'll download the audio, get a video, and make a video out of it and put it up. And
okay.
So I become a teacher. I still do lots of ministry, even on LinkedIn and Twitter and things like that, and through emails. I'm a shepherd over many orphanages in Africa, and have a lot of pastors as my children. And I'm a spiritual mother to some nations and crown princesses over in the Arab world. I'm a psychiatrist. I've been in Jordan has some refugee camps. I make videos for the women in there. So kind of doing a lot of things. And I don't leave them home anymore. So, once you get sort of trained and educated, I did what you did, go out in the community, try to meet people. And that was great, but then, you know, things changed, COVID came and stuff, so then YouTube started really taking off and videos, and I had to learn how to, I'm in the process of telling about my spiritual transformation. It's a story called It's Time, about how God took me, who used to be called Jan, and brought up Pastor Deborah. And I go through my life story with my parents, my whole life. And I go through my, I think I'm up to part number 11. It's all about
Are these available to listen to right now?
Yeah, they're on podcast. They're on, that one's in the playlist called School of Light. And on the website, there's a, I can't remember, it's called The Kingdom of Agape Love, Volume 1. All the stories are written out. I've typed them all out there. And I'm taking each one of them and making a video of them. And then in Volume 2 of The Kingdom of Agape Love, it is true stories of me helping people in the hardcore multi-generational Satanists. Very graphic. True stories of things that happened. And people I've ministered to, and that'll all, I'll take each one of those and make a video out of it for YouTube.
Good job.
What happens is people, you know, like I'm in the process of telling my story slowly, you know, all through my background and how my name was changed and how Jan slowly died and all the experiences I had and how it, the end is very unique. And so how God had me do that was he'd wake me up in the middle of the night for, I don't know, several weeks. I'd write. And he was writing through me this story. And so people would understand what spiritual transformation on the inside is. And some people might call it reincarnation. You're changed, but it's all on the inside.
Yeah.
And so on the website, there's a lot of videos, a lot of, I have a university on there, that there's classes sort of, there's no, I'm not the grader and stuff, and I go through many of the, I call them courses, classes, that people have to go through in order to help people the Lord's way. One of them is called The Valley of Tears.
What's it called?
On the website. It's called the King's International Spiritual Care University. There are, it's my experiences. Like, before you can help people the Lord's way, you have to believe certain things.
Right.
And you get asked questions. What do I believe? I think it dealt with deliverance work. And there's one called The Valley of Tears that for months and months and months, all I did was cry. Go to church.
Yeah.
They do praise and worship. I cry. Not for myself, but for other people who were hurting. And I wanted God to send somebody. Help them, please, wherever they are. They were worldwide. Okay.
That's right.
And in the process of telling my story, I tell them, I was not the first one called to be doing what I'm doing. The first one called was, her name was Teresa. She was the deliverance coordinator. But she got frightened because her car got broken into and some things were stolen. So she refused to work with people in the occult and witchcraft and all the bad stuff anymore. So God went and found me.
Right.
So everybody
is asking. The reason why I'm asking is because I have a friend that I wanted to hook you up with that I talked to today, and I was telling her about you, and she really wants to talk to you.
And she can call me on my phone
number.
Trying
to do some ministry work, and I told her that maybe you could be give her some ideas, and you just mentioned videos, and I think that'd be really helpful for her.
Have her call me at 850 501-504-0. Huh?
I'm sorry. Go ahead and say that again. Go ahead and say
850-501-5040. And leave me a voicemail because I don't answer my phone, get a lot of spam, and I'll call her back. Okay?
Okay.
Or she can email me if she wants to, and I can email her back.
Yeah,
some
rather
people
call you.
Prefer. And what does she want?
She's a minister just getting into starting out with it, and I told her, well, I know a gal that that probably would be able to help you a lot, so.
Okay.
Kind of give her guidance. She's really struggling right now with some health issues and kind of doesn't feel like she's really doing what she's supposed to be doing. And and I told her that, you know, she is helping people, whether she knows it or not, you know, because she is. She has helped people. And she had experienced the other day that I'm not going to go into because I don't want, you know, like to tell somebody else's story, but it was a kind of an experience like you've talked about with spirits and stuff, you know.
Okay.
Negative spirits. And she intervened and I think it kind of got her kind of scared.
Yes, it will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so I don't know. I thought maybe
you
could give a little bit of comfort and you know.
Yeah, it's a when you run into there's this sweet young man. He's a black guy in the crisis stabilization unit, and I took him on board and talked about how we are a three-part being, a spirit, soul, and body.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me that he really believed he was under spiritual attack. I said, why do you believe that? He said, well, my parents were into voodoo, which is in the black community, and he felt he was under attack because he didn't want to be in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now the psychiatric world and mental health world, they're not prepared to talk about that. They don't know what it is. They don't know how to deal with it. Okay. And that kind of thing. So coming from both worlds, okay, I can talk about medicine, treatment, psychiatric, straitjackets, okay?
Yeah, well, this
psychiatric
woman this woman came into her life like just like she knew her and stuff, but then all of a sudden the woman contacted her through Facebook. She knew her from a while back, and they hadn't conversed or anything. And all of a sudden she contacted her and said she wanted to come over, and she came over there, and my girlfriend felt, you know, the spirit. And got it out of her house, and then the gal, I don't know, started bringing up some other weird stuff, so she made the gal leave, and she's kind of shooken up about it. But I told her, I think she did exactly, you know, what she was supposed to do, or what, I don't know if the term.
Yeah, well, here's what happens. Okay. When you enter into that type of helping people, and you have some success, you're on the enemy's radar. They look at you, and they're coming after you. They get you afraid, so you'll never do it again. And so what happens is they got all sorts of ways. They're an invisible enemy. Catholic Church believes in them. After they've done thorough medical and psychological examination, and they determine there's nothing there, no tumors, no nothing. They have exorcists that do exorcism. They believe in your body.
But they keep that all secret.
Well, no, they really don't. They just they keep it low profile.
Right.
But they train the exorcists. They're very well educated people. They have their rituals and stuff like that. And they do believe in it. The Islamic people believe in them. They're called jinns. They actually do deliverance work there. Voodoo, a lot of black people voodoo and stuff. It's not, but it's not considered a mental health issue. Not considered mental illness, okay?
No.
So it's, I just, when you start studying that world, okay,
mm-hmm.
it is different.
Mm-hmm.
It is real.
Yeah.
Just as in the mental health world, biological mm-hmm. chemical imbalance is real. And it causes
yeah.
thoughts, emotions, issues,
mm-hmm.
concentration problems, eating problems,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And humanity has gone through thousands of years. They have gone first, they believe that everything was spiritual. And it
mm-hmm.
wasn't until sort of the age of reasoning came in that the spiritual took a back seat and
right.
Became more superstition because microscopes
mm-hmm.
showed us we have bacteria in us. It became biological. It became a disease. It's not spiritual because
mm-hmm.
the people of the world
mm-hmm.
that took a back seat. And
right.
so it became you're weird if you think that's your problem. And
mm-hmm.
they would see a lot of the effects of it in people's behaviors. They would call them evil people.
Mm-hmm.
Evil
right.
stuff, full
mm-hmm.
of hatred, but that was
mm-hmm.
a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they would determine that, oh, they had some childhood mm-hmm. abuse, drug
mm-hmm.
abuse. So the spiritual
mm-hmm.
part took a back seat.
Sure.
Okay. And, but many people, they do believe that in a lot of the in the world, you know, they believe in auras and chakras and salt that glows, and they believe in all kinds of, but that's not considered evil or wicked. Voodoo's
mm-hmm.
not really considered evil or wicked. It's just part of the culture. And the rational world, the psychiatry, that they just, you know, I just look at you as weird, but that's
mm-hmm.
your religion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn, I had to get educated, I had
mm-hmm.
to have personal experience in helping people the Lord's way. I kept my mouth shut when I did things,
mm-hmm.
ministry. I didn't
mm-hmm.
spread it around. I didn't try to make money, okay?
Right.
And I learned people would... they needed help. There was all kinds of ways that you
mm-hmm.
could help them, just sometimes through prayer. And this one
correct.
Book I read, this lady was a doctor, and she set up a primary care office, and God would send people that needed help. And this
mm-hmm.
one guy came in, and he had a lot of spiritual issues. He didn't know anything, what it was, what it was about. And God, she would go and pray to God. He'd say, look, he doesn't understand. You just pray to me, and I will heal him over time. Okay? So
mm-hmm.
sometimes that kind of stuff goes on, and your job
mm-hmm.
is to just pray. And God knows what's there and what needs to be done.
Yeah.
And another story about her was a husband brought in his wife. They were unable to consummate the marriage after 2 or 3 years. She had some issues. They tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what it was. And
mm-hmm.
she put her hands on the lady's head, and God spoke to her,
mm-hmm.
said what the problem was.
Mm-hmm.
She prayed sort of quietly. Took,
mm-hmm.
God could, took care of it.
Mm-hmm.
God deals with people in all sorts of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but if you're not in tune with God and you're helping people his way and you can't hear him, so you don't know how to help the people. And each case is different. And yes,
right.
you are dealing with curses, ancestors, demonic spirits, dealing with all kinds of things that just, oh my gosh, the mental health world doesn't talk about. You don't get trained in, but they are a good they work in the soul and the biological body. And so healing needs to be in the biological body. Like you've got some issues Okay. The mind needs to be healed of its thoughts, mm-hmm. its memories, its worries, its stress. The chemicals
yep.
in there need to live a sort of a peaceful coexistence.
Yep.
The biological body and the soul are connected through the five senses. The spirit that's inside of there has its own world, its own realm, its own issues. And mm-hmm. they're all in one body.
Yeah, my
kidneys
that went down to functioning at 15%, they went to the point of putting a port in, and they were going to do dialysis. And then all of a sudden, they did another test, blood test, whatever they do. And they said, well, we don't know what's going on, but her kidneys are functioning at whatever. It went, got better. And I was walking with a walker. I couldn't walk because I had dizziness because of the kidney failure, and then all of a sudden I wasn't using the walker anymore, and the doctor couldn't figure it out, so he did another test. Somebody had offered to give me a kidney, and because they had said that I was on a transplant list, and I went in, and they says, well, we got to check you out first. So I says, okay, fine. So they called me and said, you don't qualify, and I thought, what now? Do I have another issue? You know, and I went in there, and they says, you don't qualify because your kidneys are functioning at 42%. And then the doctor said, that just doesn't happen. And I said, well, obviously it does because it happened to me. You know, and even the doctor with my cancer, breast cancer, said, this is a miracle. And to me, the doctor saying it's a miracle is a miracle in itself.
Okay. When that happens, you have to learn, this is my God. I have work to do for him. I am a living testimony and witness to you. On the power and the love of God. You have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, they're shocked. They are shocked. And you have to learn even through your body and what happens to be a living testimony to bring education and light to the nursing and medical community. I've done that many a times. And then God will use things to you to speak to them. To help them understand, because they see a lot of things that are death-oriented, you know that. And their hope and love, hoping God and stuff, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker because most of them are Christians and loving people, and they pray to a God or Allah or somebody, and they don't like death, and they're trying to help people survive. So God will use you and your body as a testimony, a witness, and he will give you an opportunity to say, this is my God, the God of the Bible, at work. I have work to do for him. He is making sure that I stay healthy to finish the job he has given me. And right now my job is I am an ambassador of the kingdom of heaven to you to tell you there is a God that loves you. And he can heal people. Okay?
Right.
So sometimes
I couldn't believe it when I got my 37 years sobriety and my daughter got up there and she goes, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase it because I can't remember exactly what she said, but she said, first of all, she says, I'm going to say this to you, Mom, but don't ever expect that I'm going to repeat it again. I was like, well, what is she going to say, you know? She goes, you know, you have been through so many physical and mental problems that I never thought you were going to come from. And I have learned so much from you because no matter what I'm going through, I just keep fighting because I've seen you come through so much mental and physical stuff. We thought you were not going to make it. And you came through it, you know, and you're here to get 37 years to fight. And I was like weeping, you know, I was weeping.
Well, what you have to learn, you have to learn. Listen, you have to learn. That God will take adversity, bad things, and use them as a testimony to him.
Right.
And you have to be taught that when she says that, that you stand up and say, thank you, but don't thank me. You, the one who is doing this, and you have to be, it's sort of like you're an evangelist, a teacher. You don't cry. You don't get emotional because it ain't about you. You are the instrument he is using as you've given permission to speak to them about him.
Yeah.
Okay, uh-huh. See, this is where you got to have a teacher over you, mm-hmm. or else you get all sobby and everything like that. And that doesn't bring light and knowledge mm-hmm. to everybody in there, not just your daughter. But here's uh-huh. what you must learn. When you are, as you are with God, from the occult, they move out of their bodies. They'll follow you around. They're in other people. You are to witness to them and say, thank you. But I'm passing mm-hmm. that thanks on to God. It is his uh-huh. work in me. I am his witness. I am his living testimony to you that the love of God for humanity is so powerful. I have a job to do for him. I'm an ambassador. I am working. This is part of the work. So you will believe. You will pray, and you will love him as he loves you. See, every time that happens, they're shocked, and you can't take the credit for it. You have to learn and be taught how to be an ambassador
uh-huh.
and to turn their hearts to him. So they are, that the whole thing that happened to you, it's uh-huh. him at work. He's got right. you. You're on the battlefield. You've been through a war. You have
yeah.
to learn how to explain it. Uh-huh. So all those other people sitting there will sit mm-hmm. there and go, never heard that before.
That's a testament to them. Yeah.
Okay. And I had to learn how to do that.
Right.
Because you're given chances like that to explain what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, you can't miss the opportunity.
Right.
You can't get hung up in the human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to say, I am an ambassador. Mm-hmm. I am a living testimony of his work.
Mm-hmm.
He has a job for me to do. I'm still at my post. I might
mm-hmm.
be beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
Been through a battle, but the enemy has not won. Can't take
right.
me out yet. And you have to
mm-hmm.
learn that, and you have to practice it. So when those opportunities
mm-hmm.
come,
mm-hmm.
you are now sort of evangelizing,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually give an altar call right then and there and say, anybody
mm-hmm.
else who would love to get to know the God that I know that's healed this and helped me through this, come
mm-hmm.
right now to the front.
Mm-hmm.
He's waiting to meet you. I've
mm-hmm.
been where funerals have turned into altar calls. Weddings
oh.
have turned into altar calls.
Uh-huh.
You never, when you are an evangelist type person, trying
uh-huh.
to reach people to with a message, you use
uh-huh.
everything possible. A
yeah.
wedding, a funeral.
Okay, so let's go full circle back to, we're back with this realization of everything and my daughter realizing that, you know, I basically lived against unbeatable odds. And now I'm telling her that I'm going to keep living and I'm going to keep doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes.
Right?
And when she gets upset, you say, I understand you're upset and you're worried and stressed out. But my life
uh-huh.
is in his hands. I'm working
okay.
for him. He
okay.
has me, I'm on a mission. I might be beat up, tattered,
mm-hmm.
close to death.
Right.
But I am not, when he calls me home, that's when I go.
Right.
Okay, so you have
yep.
to have a response back that points
mm-hmm.
her to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she goes, wow, what a wonderful, loving God. He
mm-hmm.
has done all of this for my mother.
Right.
I don't
right.
need to be stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's where a teacher, something like me, has to come in
mm-hmm.
and help you to teach
mm-hmm.
so you can speak, knowing they're upset, but
mm-hmm.
you have to stay steady. I'm working
mm-hmm.
for him. Only he has the right to call me home when my job is
mm-hmm.
finished. As long
mm-hmm.
as you stay steady with him, you promote him, his kingdom, to other people. You don't
mm-hmm.
really care what your family thinks. I don't work for you. Pay my
right.
bills. You didn't save me. You didn't heal
mm-hmm.
me. You've had nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is between me and him. You know, you have that within yourself, but you have to learn how to tell family members. I tell my husband I'm not going out till 120. That's biblical. And I have to take care of my biological body and eat right, and keep the stress out. I've told Satan, you cannot take me out. You cannot kill me. You can try. He has. You can hit me good, but I ain't going. Only God has the right to take me. And God, when God says you prayed your last prayer, you have witnessed to the last person you need to witness to, you've adopted the last person, come on home.
Right.
I'll go, yes, sir. Only he can do that. Now, I have that within me. So I have to learn how to say and point people to him. And I got 8:26. So we have about, what, 3 or 4 minutes before the show is over.
Yeah. Why is it going quick?
Yeah, you and I get into some good conversations.
Yeah, we do.
And so, and I just had both the mental health and the spiritual side of training and education. And helping people. So I'm comfortable in both worlds, and I understand both worlds, and people can get help from both worlds at the same time, both ways, and you can respect both ways. A lot of the psychiatrists and the doctors, you see how they respond. It's a miracle. To them, it is. And they need to see that because they see so much death, and you know, and see, and they don't get to see this God working.
Yeah, I even want to put this psychiatrist that seen me when I was first diagnosed with NPD when I had 31 personalities, and he got to see me afterwards, and he just sat there and looked at me, and he says, "I just can't believe it. I cannot believe
it." they need us to be able to explain calmly and educationally. God's at work. This is a work of God. It's not just a miracle. They can't put their hands around it. Okay?
Right.
And you have to be the voice helping them to understand. And you go, I'm a living testimony to this. And you have to understand their thinking. And they need us, okay, to help them. And when we do that, we are teaching them, showing them, and helping them understand. Most of them are Christians. A lot of them aren't. Okay? But a lot of them pray to old Buddha. They pray to Confucius, and they pray to prophets, and they pray to, and they don't get healed. So we become a living work of God. And if we learn how to comfortably speak and teach it to them. But I'm going to close out now because you got 2 minutes. Yep. To close us out and play the music, okay?
I just told you 90 seconds. So I'm going to quick read Serenity Prayer, which is, please grant me the serenity to stop beating myself up for not doing things perfectly, the courage to forgive myself because I always try my best, and the wisdom to know that I am a good person with a kind heart. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and hope to that you can come on soon. Thank you. Good night.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine.